There's a reason why sleep deprivation is used as a form of torture. Because it's incredibly effective at messing you up.
You're tuned into Dadsplaining, a weekly chronicle of all the weirdest, messiest, grossest, and funniest parts of, I don't even remember
fatherhood.
How our intro goes. Holy cow.
You almost had it. I was impressed.
I was close. Yeah. It was muscle memory.
90% there, yeah.
All right, let me try that again. You're tuned into Dadsplaining, a weekly chronicle of all the weirdest, messiest, grossest, and funniest parts of fatherhood hosted by two first-time dads. I'm Jesse.
And I'm Brandon.
And today is Friday, August 24th, 2018. You're listening to episode 9 of the Dadsplaining podcast. Today we're going to be talking about the mental load of parenthood between a mom and a dad and how that balance shakes out. And then we're also going to be talking a little bit about mental health and things you can do to take care of your brain and all the weird, crazy things that parenthood does to the human brain. But first, Brandon, it's been a month since we've recorded. How is Noah doing?
Yeah, thanks for asking, Jesse. So my son Noah just turned 5 months this past weekend, so he's doing good.
Happy month day.
Month-iversary is what I'm going with for now.
Okay.
You know, whatever. So yeah, it's been going really well. And lately we have been really working on the sleep scheduling and sleep training in general. So this is the funnest part of parenting by far. At this point, you know, our son's not sleeping through the night and we really want him to because we won't be able to survive any longer. It's already been 5 months without a night's sleep. So we're trying to go through the process of training. And I'm here to say that it's something of a success story, but it comes with a lot of difficulty. So something that's really comes up around the four-month mark is known as the four-month sleep regression. So this is something that just about every parent is going to deal with to varying degrees in terms of how long it lasts and kind of how it works. But somewhere around that four-month mark, the kind of science that's happening behind the scenes from what I understand is that kids actually start to go from falling asleep and being in like a deep REM cycle the whole time to actually going in and out of that deep sleep and lighter REM sleep, which is the same as what we are doing as adults. So for me, if I am sleeping, I might roll over a couple times at night, flip the pillow over, you know, move around a little bit, and then I go back to sleep and I'm fine because I'm a grown-up. I'm not a baby. But my son, this is new for him, so when he kind of rolls over, so to speak, even though he can't roll over, he wakes up and he just like freaks out because he's like, wait, why am I awake all of a sudden? So that's what happens in the four-month sleep regression is you have to deal with a lot of that and a lot less sleep. So we've started doing sleep training, which is ridiculous. And what I would really have loved is a definitive opinion of exactly what will work, exactly how it will work, and how it's 100% effective for all children. But that never happens.
Yeah.
For parenting, for some reason, you get one opinion, then you get another opinion, then you get another opinion, and then someone says, this opinion is terrible and would damage my child forever. So we went with what's commonly referred to as the cry it out method, which basically says that when they wake up, you know, if you put your kid to sleep and then they wake up, you let them cry for a little while and then you go check on them and then you continue this process until they can fall asleep on their own. And what I learned right away is that I cried the most and my wife cried the most. My son really didn't cry as much as we did about it because there's nothing worse than hearing your kid crying. Especially because the whole point of this method is to do almost nothing about it.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty brutal process, and we almost couldn't bring ourselves to go through with it because it's really hard and painful. But there is a great side to the story because it worked. So everyone be careful. You know, I'm not saying you have to let your kid cry indefinitely. Some people do argue for that. We did the, like, going in every now and then method, but the first night after about 2 hours of the in and out, the crying and the crying and the crying, magic happened. You know, our son found his finger. He found his thumb. He inserted the thumb in the mouth and magic ensued and he slept. We just started this about a week ago and, you know, so we're only a week into it and he's already not fully sleeping through the night, but we are the ones who are waking him up because we do feed him still during the middle of the night. So it's what I'm going to call a success story.
That's awesome. So last week we had kind of a sleep regression problem too. It was temporary. I don't think it was as widespread as yours. But so David is, he'll be, 10 months old. I'm thinking in about a week, a little over a week. And he's been sleeping through the night really since he was 6 months old. But the past couple of weeks, he'll wake up at like, sometimes it's 10 p.m., sometimes it's 3 a.m.,
yeah,
and sometimes it's only for a minute and I can rock him and put him back to bed. Other times, I mean, the other night we were up from 3 to 5, and luckily, or maybe it was 4 to 6, and luckily it was a weekend, so we got to sleep in. But then as a result, you sleep in the next day and the sleep schedule's all off, and then he's up late. You know what I mean? And then it's a perpetuating cycle.
For sure, because that's the problem right now. Like, if he has a tough, you know, feed in the middle of the night and he doesn't want to go back to bed, you know, with my son, or if he does wake up a little early, like, we have him on a schedule for the daytime as well.
Yeah.
So, like, it's a double whammy where we're training him to sleep through the night, but then he also has a set schedule every day. So he's up every day at 7 a.m., and he needs to maintain that schedule so he can go to bed at, you know, 7:30. So if he wakes up at, say, 6 o'clock, you can't really put him back to bed again. And then the cat's out of the bag, and then the whole day is off by like a half hour, an hour, and it just kind of throws everything out of whack at that point.
So crazy.
So yeah, schedules are great. I don't think sleeping in's ever going to happen for me again now, though.
It'll happen. You know, I think I remember telling you in one of our other episodes, like, I was trying to encourage you. I'm like, it will, you will have normalcy. You will go to a normal, because like at the time I was perched on my high tower of sleeping, you know, all through the night. And now we're like back to Thunderdome where there's just no order whatsoever.
And back on even ground.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm back down there in the foxholes with you once again. But I'm telling us both this time, it's going to be okay. We're going to get through this.
That's what I keep telling myself every morning. I'm like, well, he slept for like 5 hours twice at two different intervals. So that's that's great.
Yeah.
It's better than it used to be. It used to be every 2 hours. Mm-hmm. We're making progress.
Yeah.
So sleep training's big for us. How's daycare been, Jesse?
So when we last recorded a month ago, David was in his second week of daycare, and he had gotten a little bit of cough, and I think I mentioned that he had stayed out for a couple of days because he had developed a fever. So since then, it's been on again, off again with that fever and with just really runny nose, congestion, stuffed up cough, chest cough kind of thing.
Great stuff.
And that was, that was part of the reason why he kept waking up in the middle of the night, because he would cough and that would wake him up. We found out a few days ago that what was going around was croup. One of the kids has been out for several weeks with it.
Wow.
And so from what I've learned about croup, it's not necessarily like life-threatening or very critical or dangerous. It's just something that's persistent. And, you know, it in daycare, you know, it goes around. You know, it's like the Black Plague. And so that's what he's been in and out with. And he's back in daycare now. He's feeling great.
Good.
Yesterday, I stayed home just in case they were going to call him out because he had kind of the runny nose and stuff again.
Gotcha.
But he's doing great. And he's the past couple of nights, he's been pretty much sleeping through the night, too. Like, I was up early this morning working, and around 5 a.m., I heard him, like, cough and then fuss a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of, like, froze in my tracks. And I'm like, okay, is he going to go back to sleep? Is he going to?
Yeah.
And then he went back to sleep, and it's like, oh, thank God.
That's like an every night problem. Once you get to a point where your child is supposedly sleeping through the night, is like, if you hear any noise on the monitor, you're like freak out, and you're like, oh no, not now.
I know.
And then you have to wait like 5-10 minutes of like tense time where you're like, please go back to sleep. And sometimes it works, and it's great, and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah,
and it's sad.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's dig into today's subject. So a couple weeks ago, it feels like a couple weeks ago, might have been more recently, you came to me with the idea, hey, let's talk about the mental load that parents have, you know? And it kind of expanded into, like, how do they share that? Who's carrying more of it? What we as dads can do to kind of help share that mental load. And then, so in the first half of the show today, we're going to talk about that, and then we're going to transition into overall mental health and well-being for parents, especially for us, for Brandon and I being first-time parents. There's a lot of things that happen, and there's a lot of, like, I've been reading a lot of studies about the effects of parenthood and the effects of being a first-time parent on your mental health, your relationship with your spouse, the relationship with the child, and how all these things kind of feed into each other. So we're going to dig into all that. We're going to give you some tips on how to kind of keep things good, and let's just dig right in.
All right. So talking about the mental load, we're going to borrow from a great article that came to us from a site called Working Mother. So if you check out our Facebook page or our Twitter, you'll see where we've posted that, and you can kind of follow along. We're going to go through it in a bit of an abridged clip just so we can make sure we hit the high-level notes here. But the general thought here is that being a parent, and especially if you're working, and we're not even saying that being just a stay-at-home parent is any kind of leisurely activity, that's its own job, but there is just so much that goes into your daily life that you have to be thinking about constantly. And then parenting, there's a whole extra section to that. Your own personal care, there's another bit to that. And sometimes this load tends to skew toward the moms in the situation. And it's not always them. It can totally switch over to the dads. But sometimes one of the two parents is maybe carrying the heavier mental load. And so the way that we tend to think about this, if we're looking at this kind of article, has actually a really great kind of comic-themed illustration to it where it kind of spells it out. And so it does a good job of visualizing it in an example where the mom is busy cooking dinner for the evening as well as taking care of the kid, and then something happens, you know, the pot overflows and explodes on the stove, and the dad is like, oh my gosh, what happened? What's going on? And that's, you know, a situation where the mom's like, what do you mean? I'm taking care of all of this stuff. And the dad says, well, you should have just asked. And that's really the nuts and bolts of some of the issues that you can run into. The idea where one of the two people in the relationship is like, oh, you should have just asked. Or if you had just let me know, I could have helped. Or let me know when you need help. Those are phrases that sound really beneficial, sound like you're communicating, sound like you're trying to be helpful, but just the mere thought that you're saying something like, you should have asked, there's something invisible happening there where you're not asking yourself, you're not plugging in on your own, you're not also thinking about all of the different things that are being done on a daily basis and need to get done, and maybe one of the two of you is focusing on more of that mental load. So we've talked about how just historically, not even, you know, today, but in the past and, you know, all throughout history and kind of the way that society has been built up is that the women tend to be the ones who manage the household, and they tend to kind of organize everything. So it's very likely that, say, the mom in the situation is thinking about all the things that the kid needs, all the things that the husband needs, all the things that she needs, all the things that need to be done around the house. And sometimes, without even thinking about it, men in the situation don't think about that kind of thing. We haven't been conditioned to think about it. So we're going to talk about trying to be aware. A lot of what we talk about is communication. Mm-hmm. This is another facet of that, just thinking about that communication. Because if you're not the person who's helping to think about all of these issues and you're waiting to be asked, then your partner is carrying 3/4 of the load instead of half of the load.
Yeah. So one thing when I was reading through this that stood out to me is it was kind of cool. They framed it as a lot of times the mom in the house gets the position of manager.
Yep.
Almost like at work, you've got a manager, and then you've got like the direct reports that report up to the manager and do what the manager says and then check off their boxes, and then they're done. They don't have to worry about managing because they have someone who manages for them. But that manager usually just manages. And when that manager also has to do the work that they're managing, it leads to dysfunction. And I've been in a job situation where I was a manager who also had to do a lot of the heavy duty, hands on, you know, grassroots level work, the kind of thing that I was also managing other people doing. And that always leads to dysfunction because managing is a full time position in and of itself. So if you're doing that and you're doing the work, you're doing 150% of the work and then leaving someone else to do, you know, 25% of the work, basically. So, you know, look at, guys, if your wife in the house is keeping track of, okay, Monday we need to make sure that the dishes are done. Tuesday we need to make sure that the laundry is done. And then she's also doing a lot of those things. And then you're looking around the house and you're saying, oh, well, no, this hasn't done. Oh, and we never got around to that. Oh, and that faucet's still leaking. What's going on? That's got a lot to do with it. You've got one person managing the to-do list and the other person just waiting for direction.
Mm-hmm. So it's important to think about sharing all of that. It's not even just saying that, okay, maybe one of you organizes and like manages the to-do list and then one of you does the to-do list.
No.
Share the whole responsibility, because this isn't just called like the to-do list load. This is called the mental load.
Yep.
And we're going to talk about the mental health aspect. So having one person shoulder all of the organization, even if they're not doing all of the work or if someone else is doing the work, that's a lot of burden, because they're the only person who's thinking about everything that everyone needs, everything that everything needs to be done, everything at home, everything at work. You know, the day doesn't end when you go home from your job.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say you're at home. you're walking through the house and you notice, oh, there's something on the floor. If you have a kid, this is inevitable. There's a toy on the ground. Okay, let me pick up the toy. Let me put it in the toy basket. Let me put it away. On your way to take it from the living room to the kid's room to put it in the basket, you're like, oh, there's a dirty diaper. Okay, mm-hmm. that hasn't been thrown away. Let me throw that dirty diaper away. You throw it in the diaper pail. Oh, the diaper pail's full. Okay, let me go ahead and take that out. Throw it in the garbage can outside. Mm-hmm. On your way outside, you notice, oh, the recycling hasn't been put out. Okay, you take the recycling. You come back inside and you notice, oh, well, there's still some dishes in the sink. Let me go ahead and take care of the dishes. So it keeps going on and on, but this is kind of a way of how you can visualize when you're walking through your house, this all exists on a daily basis, especially mm-hmm. if you're parents, and you're maybe not even aware that when you do a task, in the middle of that task, there are opportunities for 2, 3, 4, 5 more tasks that come up along the way. So mm-hmm. a lot of the times, it could take an hour, maybe 2 hours to finish your initial task, and on the way, someone who's carrying this mental load is doing 3, 4, 5 other things along the way. You started exactly. out with a simple goal of picking yeah. something up off the floor, and along the way, you've checked on the laundry, you've mm-hmm. taken out the trash, you've checked on the grocery list for the rest of the day yeah. and the week, and there's so many other things that come up, and mm-hmm. that's a kind of a burden that needs to be shared yeah. by everybody.
Right, and you know, we get this. Like, this is something that, you know, guys, if you're trying to imagine what that's like for the mom in the house that is going through that thing, you've probably run into the situation at work where you start writing an email to someone, a reply, right? Because we all have those, like, 3/4 of the emails I send in a day start out with, sorry for the late reply, because you get so behind. So you start replying to an email and then you realize, oh, there's one thing I was supposed to do for that person. So you go to do that thing. And when you get to that thing, you find, oh, wait, I was supposed to do this thing. And that just leads you down a rabbit hole. And then 6 hours later, it's closing time, and then you never hit send on that email. So yep, it took you 6 hours to do what should have taken 5 minutes. That same situation is going on at home.
Yeah, maybe a good check is if you notice sometimes that you're being asked to do a lot of things mm-hmm. around the house, you shouldn't have to be asked mm-hmm. to do all of those things, maybe. Like a reminder every now and then is fine. Like, everyone's mm-hmm. going to forget things. But it's the being asked is kind of the crux of the problem with the replies like, oh, if you just let me know, mm-hmm. or, oh, you should have asked. So thinking ahead and trying to help with that mental burden is kind of hard. And I think the equation you're making, Jesse, to like the work lifestyle versus the home lifestyle is pretty good, because we're talking about how, you know, in society, like, women tend to be in charge of the home, men tend to be in charge of work. Well, if men are more likely to be in managerial positions at work, you guys know what it takes mm-hmm. More often than not to manage people.
Yeah. And there's a reason that you delegate things to right. the people that work for you. It's because you don't have the time to do that yourself. Well, unfortunately, your wife really doesn't have anyone to delegate things to unless, you know, you've got, like, Oompa Loompas running around.
Yeah, or like
house.
A grown-up child. But yeah, if you have yeah. a baby, you can't just delegate and be like, oh yeah, okay, my five-month-old's mm-hmm. going to clean yeah. up after himself.
But I mean, really, like, it's your house too. Like, you signed the deed to the house. You pay the mortgage as well. It's as much your house as it is your wife's house. Like, she shouldn't be the manager of the household, mm-hmm. especially in this day and age where, you know, back in the 50s, you know, back in the Mad Men era, yeah, the man goes off to work and then the wife is the manager of the house. And I'm not saying that was better. It definitely wasn't, because women were kind of stuck there.
Yep.
But they didn't also have a full-time job to worry about. Like, these days, the mom has the full-time job, and yep. then she comes home, and then she has to manage. Like, that means she's working two jobs.
Another full-time job.
Yeah.
Exactly.
One key aspect, something that is affected by the mental load and something that can also relieve the mental load, is keeping an eye on your mental health as parents. So I was reading a bunch of studies that kind of came across my Google browser, you know, on my way to recording the podcast today. And a common theme I found is that with parents, especially parents of young children and first-time parents, there's a lot of mental health conditions that can actually come up. And they talk about depression and anxiety and OCD, and those are not like lowercase anxiety, lowercase depression. Like, those are like, they're talking medically,
yeah.
like diagnosable, certifiable mental issues that can come as a result of being parents. And then those are also things that they're caused by just the new situations that you're in as parents. You know, you're sleeping less, you've got more things to argue about with your spouse. Sexually, there's, you know, maybe there's a shift in the dynamic there. So there's all mm-hmm. kinds of things that are affecting your well-being. And then that leads to issues like anxiety and depression, which in turn feed more of those same problems.
And, you know, I think, Jesse, you know, when you're talking about things like depression and anxiety, OCD, going, you know, over the top on things because your mind's going like a million miles an hour. Something that people don't tend to think about those things, like right after you have a baby, or even, you know, weeks, months, years, you know, early years after that. You might think of something that's way more talked about, like postpartum depression. Like you're on the lookout for that one because it's, you know, you've heard a lot about it and you're thinking all about it, and it's like, you know, capital P postpartum depression, like what you're talking about. I like that analogy. And so you're not on the lookout for anxiety because what's that? Like, that's not diagnosable, surely. Like, what is that? What am I doing with that? But, you know, thinking about your mental health isn't just about things that you might think of as like the big things to worry about. You really need to be careful on the day-to-day mental health and personal care.
Yeah, exactly. And a big part of that, and this is a topic that we've covered in previous episodes, is sleep deprivation. You're not going to get a full night's sleep as a parent for a long time, but you should really do your best to make sleep a priority. That is one area where I fail big time because I work, and then I also do like independent projects of my own to kind of make some extra money. And it is really hard to find that balance, especially when you've got a kid and then you also want to squeeze in leisure time and all these things. So, I mean, lately I've been averaging 4 or 5 hours of sleep a night, and it sucks. So this is an article out of Psychology Today. It was published last year, February 25th, 2017, The Surprising Effects of Parents' Sleep Deprivation. And they talk a lot, and a lot of this stuff is common sense, but some of it really is surprising. So when you don't sleep enough, because parents don't sleep enough, it affects everything from like even how you're able to communicate happiness. It is harder for you to smile. Like you really subconsciously smile less when you don't sleep, which makes sense because, you know, you're not happy about not getting any sleep. But you might not realize that you're walking around with like a scowl on your face all day, if you bring that home, you know, from a hard day's work, you're communicating with your spouse with that scowl on your face. That's going to affect your relationship between the two of you. That might even affect how you're able to connect to your kid, which in turn is just going to fuel more problems and more anxious feelings, and then more sleep deprivation from that. Your voice has less positive effect. So you're less, you might be less enthusiastic when you talk about things, you know? And, you know, if you're having a conversation with your wife and she's, this actually happened to me yesterday. She was telling me a story of something that happened, and then there was a part of that story that would have ordinarily really surprised me in like a positive way. She was like, oh, and then this happened. I was like, oh, okay, cool. And she was like, oh, I really thought you would have been more surprised by that. And I was like, oh, no, I really was very surprised. Didn't I communicate
that? Didn't give that vibe off, huh?
Yeah. No, she was like, no, you just kind of gave off a,
Yeah, like a sky is blue kind of vibe.
Yeah, like, yeah. So I didn't even realize, because, again, I'm on 4 or 5 hours of sleep a night. I didn't realize that I'm kind of muted a little bit.
Yeah, you're like, you're taking in the information, maybe, hopefully, sometimes maybe not even, but you're not putting back out anything physical, anything tangible.
Exactly.
Like on your face, on your voice, you're just kind of neutral.
Yeah.
Stone face.
Yeah, and you and I are both in this phase right now where our kids are having a hard time sleeping, so even if we go to bed at a decent hour, we're losing an hour or two just waking up in the middle of the night, getting the kid to go back to sleep, and then forcing ourselves to go back to sleep, which sometimes can be a problem.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, even though my son has done great with the sleep training, I'm still waking up every night to give him a bottle in the middle of the night because, you know, he needs that for his weight gain. Like, he's had some issues with that, so we're trying to help him out with giving him an extra feed. So then I got to wake up, got to heat up the bottle, takes a few minutes of that, got to go in there, got to feed him, then got to rock him, make sure he's cool. Like, the whole process can take anywhere from 15 minutes to an hour.
Yeah.
Depending on his mood.
Yeah, exactly. Another thing I was reading was this study. It was published back in 2014 in England, and it's called The Transition to Parenthood and Mental Health in First-Time Parents. And I'll post a link to this in the show notes because it's really interesting, and there's a lot of stuff in it, and it's written by people who are way smarter than me, so I'm going to mess up a lot of it. But the gist of it, because I've only really gotten the gist of it, is that especially in first-time parents, like I mentioned, things like depression and anxiety. And they even mention panic and post-traumatic stress disorder occur in men and women during the transition to parenthood. And they're talking about even beginning in pregnancy.
Yeah.
You know, we've covered the pregnancy phase and how that affects dads. That was our very first episode. And we talked about how a lot of times it doesn't really hit us, but then emotionally some things start coming up. And, you know, you and I even talked about feeling anxious watching movies where children were in danger.
For sure.
Which is something that didn't used to affect us. you know, these are feelings that are new feelings that start cropping up when you know that you're going to have a kid, you know, in your care. But what this is telling us, this study, is that parents are at an increased risk of a range of disorders. And what it says is there is also high comorbidity between them. And that's a word I've never read before, let alone said out loud. So I don't know.
Comorbidity.
Yeah, the only part of the word I know there is morbid, which...
So is that like general talking about between the two of you, things are a lot more morbid in general? So that's like talking about the monotone, the lack of happiness.
I think it's just saying that these things kind of, you know, they bounce back and forth. It's a vicious cycle.
It's like a loop between the two parents because both of you are maybe feeling a little less joyful, a little more down, a little more sleep deprived.
Exactly. You're feeling all this stuff, and then that leads to problems, and the problems lead to more what they're quantifying as disorders.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes through sleep deprivation, which is a big problem, which can have negative implications for the parent-infant relationship. And that's a big part of what it focuses on is your relationship with your child. And that's something that another study I was reading is that your relationship with your kid is the strongest during the preschool phase. So not when he's in preschool, but before he goes to school. So that first, like maybe 4 years, because after that point, you don't see him all day. He goes off and does his own thing. He's learning things at school. And I think this isn't really what they were saying, but what I think is you get a little bit less close and they start becoming their own person. So they're no longer just that like one little tiny part of you. So a lot of well-being issues don't really come up until they start getting into school. So that's when you start getting a little bit more of the conflict with the spouse, the anxiety, the fights over how do we raise them, how do we answer this question, that kind of thing, which is not to be pessimistic. I'm not saying that things are bad now and they're just going to get worse. but there's different problems that you encounter at different stages. And I think that if you don't keep an eye on those things and don't talk about them like we're talking about them today, they can sneak up on you and really kind of hamstring you. So without dwelling too much on the hard science of stuff, because I have no understanding of it, one thing that I wanted to do was offer little solutions, little unverified. This isn't something that I've put into a study somewhere. This is just something that's worked for me. And Brandon, I'm sure you've got things that have worked for you.
Sample size of one.
Exactly. Take it with a shaker of salt. that can help kind of stave off a lot of those problems. And something that's worked for me and Ashley lately is no matter how hard it is, making sure you squeeze in that leisure time. David, you know, now he's 10 months. He's still actually in a phase where we can take him out in public and he's not going to pitch a fit. He's not going to scream.
Right.
The past two nights, we've actually gone out with him in the evening right around his bedtime. Kept him up a little bit later than normal, but he goes right to sleep when we get home. First night, we went out on a coffee date and then we went shopping at Goodwill, just like, you know, finding bargains and stuff. And that was a cool little bonding time for us. And it was also a way to kind of forget all of the chores, all of the to-dos, you know, all of the anxieties of, oh, we haven't done this, we haven't done that. Are we good parents, bad parents? We were just having fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then last night we went out and we got some coffee, we got some ice cream. You know,
nice.
We just kind of window shopped for a while and took him with us and pushed him around in the stroller. And, you know, the consequence of that is you get home and then you got all those things that you put off and you still have to do them. So you stay up a little bit later. And then, of course, that fuels the sleep deprivation, which, you know, is a vicious cycle. But that little bit of leisure, that little bit of downtime for our brains, in my experience, has really kind of, it's just helped. It's just kind of brought some balance. So you've got all the problems, but then, you know, you've got some relaxation in there as well. And that still kind of helps you connect to not just me as dad, but me as Jesse.
Mm-hmm. No, great point about trying to do something to help the situation. And it's easy to get overwhelmed because there's so many things to do. We talked about the mental load and how many things might be on that to-do list and how you need to help divvy it up. And both of you need to be worried about it and thinking about it. But don't feel like the only way you're going to be successful is if you tackle everything, you solve everything. Tackle one thing at a time.
Yeah.
Tackle one thing a day. And if you can, do it together. So, you know, you mentioned going out, you know, shopping, whether it's for clothes, whether you're doing grocery shopping, whatever it is, like, you know, you have to do that. Do it together.
Yeah.
Take your kid with you. You know, it'll feel good because you're accomplishing something, but you'll also have some time together and you'll feel like you're both doing it and it's a team. And it just, it feels good.
So I'm going to dig through our comment section, and last week I put the question out to our followers, and I said, you know, in your household, who is handling the share of, you know, that mental load that we've been talking about? and also what do you guys do to keep track of it? So I got a couple comments from moms and a couple comments from dads. And the dads, my buddy Paul commented, and he was, you know, flat out honest. He said, mostly my wife handles that stuff. She's also very old school about it. She doesn't want to update the digital. She keeps literally a calendar on the wall of things to do. And that's actually something that Ashley and I have talked about, is actually getting a physical calendar so we can write out all of our appointments. We can write out everything that we need to do, you know, week by week, chores lists from Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then we can both take care of it. And it doesn't have to just exist in her brain somewhere.
Very hard to do that. We got a physical calendar as soon as our son was born, set it up in March of 2018. It's still on March of 2018. We have not moved forward. It's beautifully filled out for the first 2 weeks of his life, and it hasn't progressed since.
Oh, dear. Okay.
We just need to try harder, though. Calendar is a good idea. We just need to try harder.
We got another comment here. Yvonne says, there are some dads that will step up and share the tasks, definitely more so today than back in my day of raising kids in the 60s. You know, and that's something I mentioned earlier. These days, you know, these things we're talking about, this is a trend that's happening. You know, dads are learning to kind of step up, especially now that moms and dads are, they're both equally spending time in the workforce, so they really need to share the load at home because, I mean, you're both just completely zonked when you get home from work. We also got a comment from Karina. You know, she says, that's me. She admitted it. Hey, I'm the one who handles most of the stuff in the house, but my husband is able to actually go to appointments and stuff like that with me, now that we've gotten kind of into a groove. I've also seen, my cousin Kendall mentions, she says, definitely not her husband. And then she used two laughing emojis. And she says, he just needs to carry everything. And that's, so knowing my cousin's personality, that's less of the husband not stepping up and more of my cousin saying, okay, I know what I'm good at. I know what you're not really gonna handle very well. So let me just, I can take care of this part on my own.
Sure, there's an equilibrium. Like, yeah. If you're not gonna split everything 50-50. Mm-hmm. Like, there's gonna be things that you're better at than somebody else.
Exactly.
But just talk about it, you know? So go home after listening to this beautiful episode from us and just have that conversation. Just say, hey, am I helping out enough? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, wherever, whichever one you are in the relationship, you know, both of you can ask each other, like, are we doing enough? Am I doing enough? Do you feel like you're doing too much? Do you feel like I'm doing not enough? Like, just gut check each other.
Mm-hmm. And I got another comment from Karina today, and she's one of our more dedicated fans. You know, she's one of the moms that followed the Dadsplaining podcast. And so today I posed the question, you know, how do you keep track of your mental health? How have things changed since you've had a kid? You know, what are you noticing in your brain? So she says, everything for me is slower. So my son has autism. He's amazing. He's nonverbal, and he has seizures at night due to not sleeping. So I don't really sleep, and although he's five, he sleeps in the bed with me, so if he rolls over, I'm able to check on him. I take care of appointments, but since I usually work nights, my husband takes care of dinner and homework. My daughter's a handful and the one who tests our patients, but she's overall a good kid. My mental health is low because all I do is worry. Since my son is nonverbal, I never fully know if he's doing okay in school or getting bullied or how the teachers are or anything. So when he was at daycare, I could ask his sister and she would actually tell me of times when he would get bullied, but now I really don't know. So hence the worrying. And she says, you know, basically, bottom line, I survive on coffee, sarcasm, and nerd references. You know, those little things that you do.
Do what you gotta do, get you the day. Karina, you're rocking it. That's pretty much all we can say.
Like, yeah, you're killing it.
Doing great.
Exactly. You know, and that's one thing that I think that sometimes parents like us who don't have that experience of, for instance, raising a child with autism, it totally changes things. Like, you know, a lot of these tips that we're sharing are going to be relatable for everyone, but there are a lot of situations that we just can't fully relate to. And I can't speak to, you know, how her mental load is maybe doubled or tripled of what ours might be. So, you know.
And two kids, we have one kid each, so we're just not there yet. But yeah. We're trying, folks. We're trying. Not to have more kids.
No.
Well,
that
was
an announcement for a second there.
No.
So that's all the time we have for today. Thanks for tuning in. Until next time, be sure to keep up with us on Facebook and Twitter. And you can also email us at dadsplainingpodcast@gmail.com.
And be sure to subscribe wherever you find your podcasts. If you have a free minute, give us a review. We really appreciate it. Hey, Jesse, what are we going to talk about next week?
Next week, we are going to talk about the dad bod.
Oh, whoa.
Oh, yeah. It is in vogue, baby. We're going to talk about why dads' bodies change, how they change, all the things that are going on the inside, and what you can do about it. So, yeah, thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Jesse.
And I'm Brandon. Hey, Jesse, what do you call a fat psychic?
I don't know.
A fortune teller.
Oh, because fortunes.
Because he's fat.
But he's also a fortune teller.
Hey.
Hey, thanks for listening.